Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of January the 20th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. A special edition of The Minutes this week, focusing on the 2025 budget. City Manager John Collin will join me to talk about the 2025 operating budget in just a moment. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and on our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. If you want to get involved and comment on the budget, there are a few opportunities this year. Depending on when you're seeing or hearing this episode of The Minutes, you can attend a public open house style budget question and answer session. It'll take place on Wednesday, January the 22nd at the Italian Cultural Center. The session gets underway at 6:30 p.m. City councilors will be at the same session earlier in the day to get their questions about the proposed budget answered directly by administration. Now, City Council will hear about the city's long-term financial overview on Tuesday, January the 28th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, with budget deliberations taking place on January the 30th, February the 3rd, and February the 5th. Each of those meetings start at 5 p.m., and the public is invited to all of those meetings at City Hall and Council Chambers. Ratification of the budget is slated for February the 10th, with that meeting again starting at 6:30 at night at City Hall. Now, getting into some budget specifics, overall, the tax levy increase for 2025, as proposed, sits at 3.7%. This is lower than the council direction of a maximum 3.8% increase. Overall, there is just over $385 million in tax-supported operations and $63.8 million in rate-supported operations. On the average tax bill, this means for every $100,000 in assessment, you will pay an additional $56. There are some service enhancements in this year's budget, and that includes $1.7 million in assessment growth revenue that will be directed to a newly created assessment growth reserve fund to support future growth throughout Thunder Bay. $1.2 million is budgeted for the temporary village project, and that includes staffing, safety, security, and operations of the village, as well as increase in funding to Superior North EMS to replace additional ambulances. As well, there will also be an additional $1.1 million put into the Solid Waste and Recycling Reserve Fund, and that's to manage the costs of the provincially mandated organics or green bin program. And this year's budget, if you take a look at it at thunderbay.ca/budget, is a little bit easier to read, with the format that makes it easier to understand where the city spends its tax dollars and how the city receives revenue. In general terms, for every $1,000 of property tax revenue that is received by the city spends $221 on police services, $145 on fire rescue, $51 on EMS, $56 on transit, $77 on public works, and that includes things like roads, bridges, snow removal, and traffic lights. $68 goes to the Thunder Bay District Social Services Administration Board. $53 is spent on recreation and culture, that includes events. $115 is spent on general government, and that includes things like finance, legal, and realty services, as well as supports for the city manager, the mayor, and city council. As well, $32 is spent on solid waste and recycling, $22 on long-term care, $27 on libraries, and $36 on parks. Looking beyond property taxes, water bills are slated to go up by 3% based on the operating budget, and that's part of the city's long-term water billing plan. Of course, as I mentioned, you can learn more about the budget by visiting our website, thunderbay.ca/budget. It is perhaps one of the most important documents in the city, the annual budget. This week, city councilors and administration are diving into the annual operating budget headfirst. Thunder Bay has a nearly $450 million operating budget, and that includes items that are rate-supported, like boater services and the landfill. And there's a lot of decisions to be made before this $450 million document is presented to council to deliberate and decide upon. John Collin is the city manager here in Thunder Bay, and he plays a big role in setting the direction of the budget every year. John, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. It's always great to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate when you're able to make just a few minutes in your in your day to come in. So let's start with numbers. And I hate talking numbers on podcasts because they don't translate well, but it's the budget. I guess we have to make an exception. The budget mandate was 3.8% this year.
That's right.
Why was it important to stick to that 3.8?
Well, I think it's important for a couple of reasons. But the bottom line is we have to make sure that our budgets are affordable and sustainable to those who are actually going to pay. That is to say, our residents and our businesses. I want to be quite clear. We could have easily put forth a budget where we could justify, not justify, but provide reasons for 7, 8, 9, 10% increase to the budget. The requirements are there. We have to enhance certain community services. There is projects that the council would like to entertain. There are projects and asks from our community. We could easily go to 8, 9, 10%. But that's not the point. We need to do something that we can justify. And really what it comes down to is it affordable to those who have to pay it? And our definition of affordability right now, which council has supported, is to keep it in line with inflation. An inflationary adjustment is reasonable. Any more than that is not. So we've taken a four-year average of inflation, with one of those 4 years being predictive what's going to happen next year, and we've come up with the figure of 3.8, and that's what we're going with.
Now, years ago, and I'm talking, you know, 25 years ago, Thunder Bay had a lot of 0% increased budgets. I'm assuming that that's just not possible to do anymore.
Oh, I think we could ultimately get there. That very much depends on growth. If we have very good growth, for example, if we had growth of 3%, then really, you may not need a tax rate increase at all. The taxes you get from that growth should, in fact, cover the inflationary pressures.
But we're not there.
Oh, we're not there. No, we won't be there for a while. We are putting a lot of time and effort into the growth agenda. We will see increases to the growth in the city of Thunder Bay. I am convinced of that. But growth doesn't happen overnight. You don't snap your fingers and all of a sudden a new manufacturing plant is here. It takes time.
There's the $1.7 million growth projected for this year, which is going to that growth fund. And there's a memo going to council on the 30th talking about, you know, kind of the first things that we're going to do with that growth money. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the idea was, in years past, we've taken whatever little bit of growth money we've gotten, or increased tax revenue, if you will, and we've just used it to help offset the tax rate. That's a strategy that works in times where you're at steady state and things aren't fluctuating too much. But if we truly want to grow the city so that we benefit from that growth, then we should be investing properly to achieve that growth. So what we're going to do, success breeds success. We're going to take that little bit of success we have with growth, and we're going to invest it in areas and use it to get more growth, which will then get us more money, which will then get us more growth. It's a very recognized common practice, and it will work here.
And I know, as I said, the memo is a little specific about what's coming forward. I think it's changes to legal services and something else. Can you describe why that?
So some of the things we've identified already that we'll use for that money is we know we're not keeping up with all of the legal considerations, contractual requirements, and agreements that are required when you are bringing in new business and when you are developing new areas of the city. Legal is slowing us down to a degree, and it's not an intentional thing. It's a capacity thing. So we're going to take a look at hiring another lawyer. We're going to use it in other areas for small little initiatives that we know will give us benefit. But the biggest purpose of that reserve fund for growth is we're developing a smart growth action plan. We're going to lay out exactly what we should be doing to enhance the growth of the city. Well, a lot of those initiatives are going to require in-year funding in 2025 to get them started. We need that reserve.
Okay, and we need to know where that money's coming from, right?
Exactly. We need to identify, because trying to find $500,000 or $700,000 for a project in the middle of a budgetary year is very difficult.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's talk about staffing. There's a lot of talk about staffing in the budget. There's a line item in every department talking about, you know, wage adjustments or wage changes. There was a mandate, though, to stick to a 1% increase in staffing costs or staffing rates. So why did you kind of set that figure?
Because otherwise we wouldn't have achieved the 3.8, plain and simple. approximately 60% of our budget goes towards people costs. It's the largest part of our budget. If you don't somehow keep that in check, then you can't keep the overall budget in check. And then once again, we'll be going to the community and asking them to pay more than just inflationary pressures.
And that doesn't mean that staff are only going to see a 1% increase or there's a complete, you know, freeze or anything like that on hiring.
No, not at all. And thanks for bringing it up. There are some important caveats that our own employees and the broader community need to understand. We are going to respect all the collective agreements and the wage increases that we have committed to within those agreements. And we remain committed to having fair and appropriate wage increases as we move forward. We also have no intention of reducing the size of the workforce. We're not keeping up in certain areas right now. So reductions really aren't in the cards. We will keep it at 1% by carefully managing other aspects of our people costs. And the big example that I give is we know that we are not going to fill all our vacancies in 2025, even though we would want to. And even though we're going to try to fill our vacancies, we know what history has shown us. And history has shown us that we will never fill all of our vacancies. So we did a closer look at that and figured out which positions or the total value of the positions that we think we will not fill in 2025, and we put that in the budget. But the employees will get their pay and will get their fair and appropriate increases as we move forward.
And is that frustrating as a city manager too, knowing that there's jobs out there that you want to fill and you just can't fill them?
I don't think frustrating is the word I would use. It's the reality. As the city grows, as we enhance our image, perhaps that will also help. Many municipalities, even those who are growing incredibly well in Southern Ontario, are faced with the same struggles of that talent pipeline and of getting enough people into their ranks. Mm. It's just reality. Getting frustrated does nothing to help that reality. We just need to work through it.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's talk about OMPF funding. That's the Ontario Municipal Partnership Fund. They distribute money to municipalities right across Ontario. You have choices when you get that funding from the province. So this year, the budget says, you use that money for ambulances, the organics program, which is coming, and then the need to supplement those agencies, boards, and commissions. Why that decision?
Well, because when we started the budgetary process this year, we did send a letter to all of our agencies, boards, and commissions and said that the city is focused on 3.8% and we would ask you boards to do the same. They tried, and I do give them credit for trying, but in a number of cases, and the podcast is just not long enough to discuss all the reasons why, a number of the boards and commissions were not able to achieve 3.8%. But at the end of the day, we would still want the community, if at all possible, to only pay the 3.8. So we made a decision to use this increased funding we're receiving from the province to offset those costs from the boards. The reason to do that is to keep the overall tax rate at less than 3.8.
Okay. So within the rising costs that we've heard of from the agencies, boards, and commissions, emergency services part of that, or policing at least is part of that, and it's been going up for a number of years. We've heard from a number of communities about that. How do we kind of contain that cost or work to make that as manageable as we can?
Sure. So first of all, I think it's important to recognize that we absolutely need those emergency services. What we're talking about, the safety of the public. So fire, rescue and fire response and police services are a fundamental core and responsibility under legislation that we have to deliver. And we have to deliver it in a way where we can put our hands on our hearts and say, we are addressing the public safety of the community. So they're here to stay. The challenge, of course, has been that the costs of providing those services has grown for all sorts of reasons. And we would need another half hour to talk about all those reasons. But it is the reality. And there's no line or vision on how those costs would decrease in any significant way in the coming years. So what we need to address is how do we continue to afford those services as we move forward? I liken it to an insurance policy for a home. Nobody wants to pay a penny more for their insurance than they have to. But when they need that insurance, it better be there and it better be good. That's what police services do for you. That's what fire services do for you. Police is our largest single line item on our budget. The fire department is another large item on our budget. That's not going to change. So we need to take a look at how we fund police moving forward. And maybe we're getting to a point where municipalities cannot build the satisfy the entirety of the bill. Maybe other levels of government have to contribute towards emergency services, not unlike they contribute to other functions that municipalities currently provide. Time will tell. It is going to continue to be a discussion point as we move forward, and we have to solve this eventually.
And it's fair to say, too, that this just isn't a Thunder Bay issue.
Oh, not at all. Every community in Canada would identify the exact same issue, the escalating costs of emergency services. So we're in good company, and I think all working together with the provincial governments and the federal governments, we can map out a path forward where we still assure public safety, but find a better way to pay for it. So the question becomes, are there different ways to fund those services?
Yeah, and as you said, yeah, they're not going away.
They are not.
Yeah. Your first budget in Thunder Bay that you've delivered, how was this budget compared to what you've delivered in other municipalities that you've worked in?
It's always the same thing, right? It's a question of achieving balance between needs, wants, desires, and the reality of what we can afford. That's the budgetary process and everything from a person's individual family to small business, medium-sized business, big business, corporations, and municipal organizations who have an incredible number of different services, functions, and programs that have to be delivered. So how is this different? It's not. The numbers are different. The services and programs might be a little different, but at the end of the day, it's an analytical, professional judgment exercise to take a look at wants, needs, desires, and the reality of what can be afforded.
Now, going through every page of the budget, and I did actually read all 247 pages of it. Yes, it's a tradition for me at this point now. There's a lot of discussion about refining costs. So how do you go and refine costs? Because we've heard that that's been done before.
Sure. You know, I think what we need to realize is the budgetary pressures that a municipality is under right now, and City of Thunder Bay is no different, is not something new that's just happened post-COVID or because of COVID. We've always been under constant pressure to try to minimize costs. There is never, I don't know of a situation in the last 10 to 15 years where any municipality would say, we have more than enough money to do what we want
right.
to do. It just doesn't exist that way. You're constantly into cost cutting and refinement. And to the credit of the people who are here well before me, that has been happening in the City of Thunder Bay. Every year, people are looking at how they could possibly refine costs. I am convinced of that. All we did this year is more of that. Taking a look at lifting up every stone and seeing if there's a way to save $10,000 here and $5,000 there. And the old adage of swallow the elephant one bite at a time. If you do that exercise on a regular recurring basis, you can find ways to be more effective. And I think technologies and innovations are helping us to achieve savings in certain areas.
And we don't obviously see it yet to that minute detail when we get the overall budget document, right? Because the numbers are rounded a bit and such. But really, it does come down to $1,000 at a time when you're in the preliminary meetings.
It does. And even after the budget is approved and we're into the execution phase, that exercise continues. Can we save $1,000 here that we might be able to redistribute over somewhere else that is overspent, for example? So the frame of mind is always, always one of sharpen the pencils, tighten the belt, whatever phrase you want to put on it, but focus towards the best use of the taxpayer money.
We hear from the public, and you know, this certainly isn't everyone, but we hear from some people saying, you know, there's got to be more room to make cuts. You got to make some bigger cuts to lower the tax increase. How do you respond to that kind of claim?
I don't support it. If there were bigger cuts, people before me would have made them. We have been in cutting mode for at least the last decade. If there was something big, it would have been identified by now. No, it's a common belief. I understand that. I understand why people would have that belief. I think it's more a hope than a belief. But no, the golden egg does not exist in a back closet somewhere. This is going to be tough refinement work, and it's going to be $1,000 at a time.
Yeah, so you didn't find the golden egg when you first moved into your office.
I did not. It was not left on the desk for me. No.
Darn. Yeah. Maybe for the next guy, yeah. Right? So if people remember just one or two things about this year's budget, what would you want them to remember?
That we fulfill the commitment of bringing this budget in at the inflationary pressure. In other words, a four-year rolling average of CPI is 3.8%. We're bringing a proposal forward that is just under that. That's very powerful. The second one is we're always about comparators. So let me give you what I think is an important comparator. If you look at cities of 100,000 or more, because it's not fair to compare us to cities that are half our size or towns or villages,
fair, yes.
Right? If you look at cities that are 100,000 or more, today, as we speak, I am only aware of one city that is coming in with a budget at less than 4%, and that's at Ottawa at 3.9. And I don't know how they got there, whether they tapped into reserves or whether they got special funding or whatever else. Doesn't matter. Theirs is 3.9. Ours is 3.8. Or 3.7, excuse me. Every other city that I'm aware of in Ontario with 100,000 or more people have come in well above 4 and into the 5s, 6s, 7s, and 8s. So I view that as we've done okay. We're all living in the same situation, the same circumstances. And for us to have been able to deliver this budget to council for consideration and for the benefit of the community, I'm very proud of it that we have managed to come in as the lowest city of 100,000 or more as we know it today. And again, many cities are still in their deliberations, so I stand to be corrected on that. But right now, we are at the bottom of the heap, and it's a good place to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might not have been possible, or Pete, you might have not been able to say that for a number of years here.
Yeah, and through no fault of anybody, right? Circumstances change. But to be at the bottom of the heap increases our competitive advantage going forward. I can now try to court a business to come into this city with the help of a whole bunch of other people. And we can say we have competitive tax rates. And in fact, we have the lowest tax increases. That's very powerful.
John, you've got a number of budget nights under your belt, so I hope you're ready to burn the midnight oil a few times.
Yeah, I'm actually quite optimistic that it won't be as bad as perhaps years past, because it is ultimately a good news budget. I hesitate to use the term good news because nobody likes any tax increase, myself
right.
included. But of what the budget could have perhaps been, I think it's a good news budget. So I'm optimistic that we'll get some good input, but that overall it'll be smooth sailing moving forward.
And if we look even further into the future, 2026, I guess it would be, it's proposed to be a 2.5% increase based on that rolling CPI.
Yeah, that's what we're predicting at this point. But again, it'll be the four-year rolling average as we know when we start the deliberations next August. But right now we're thinking about 2.5%. If getting to 3.7 was a struggle, you can just imagine what getting to 2.5 will be. But council is committed to it. We, as administration, are committed to it, and we'll get there.
I'm going to make sure that I don't burn out any light bulbs or anything in the studio. I'll do my part.
Fair enough.
John, appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you.
That is John Collin. He is the city manager here in Thunder Bay, and he joined me today in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. To learn more about the budget, visit thunderbay.ca/budget. And if you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback on The Minutes, visit our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. As I mentioned, that's thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. Chat again next week. Make it a great day.